good evening and welcome to Season 14, Episode 26 of the Ubuntu Podcast. My name's Alan, welcome to the show. With me this week is Martin. Hello Martin, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
Good, and Mark, how are you?
I'm quite well, thank you.
Excellent. This week we have an interview with Andreas, the developer of Serenity OS, and I can't be more excited to have this conversation. We'll also have some command line love and some of your wonderful listener feedback. If you'd like to join us and chat with us, then you can do in Telegram. If you go to ubuntupodcast.org/telegram, you can also tweet at us angrily or otherwise. We're at Ubuntu Podcast on Twitter. And you can leave comments on our YouTube, but we never look at those, so don't worry about that. Martin, what have you been up to this week?
A couple of weeks ago, before I was in prison, I was making a new workstation, although I didn't do so much of the building of this particular workstation. My daughter ended up assembling most of it. It was quite a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Did you just, like, put it in front of her, walk away, and it was built?
Almost, actually. It almost worked out like that. So you may remember me talking a few weeks ago about getting a private office at, like, a co-working space nearby, and I needed a computer for that. So with components that I had, I decided to build one, but I needed a case and a couple of other extra pieces. And when I came to assemble it on a Saturday morning, I just sort of said to my daughter, I've got a computer to build. Do you want to help me? And she was like, oh, yeah. And yeah, at one point, I went downstairs with the instructions to make tea and hot chocolate. And when I came back, the SSDs and the power supply had been installed. So yeah, I was kind of surplus to requirements.
Was this in the shape of a Commodore 64 by any chance?
This was not one of those Commodore 64s. No, this is in a small sort of miniature tower case, a glass and vented tower with a mini RGB DTX LEDs board. It has all the RGBs, but as is my want, only B is enabled.
It sounds unusually modern for you, Martin. You're right.
Yes. It's like a miniature version of this Threadripper system that I have next to me. So it's a tiny Threadripper, almost. It's the baby Threadripper, the 5950X. I love it. Anyway, so my daughter effectively built her first PC and has now got an appetite for that. So I feel like I'll be digging out some old computer cases. I've got loads of, like, hardware around. She wanted the one that she'd built, which, of course, I vetoed. But I think I might give her the bits to build her own.
Nice. Mark, what have you been up to?
I have been moving stuff to the cloud.
Ooh, that sounds dangerous. That sounds like you're putting things on other people's computers, so I hear.
Yes, well, this was already on other people's computers. My employer's computers, in fact. So while my job is technically a software developer, what I've actually been working on for the past year and a half or so is moving our on-premise learning environments to cloud hosting. So up until recently, we've basically had a cluster of virtual machines running on premise, about a dozen or so web servers and some database servers and some file servers and so on. And we've been looking at moving all of these to the cloud to benefit from being able to sort of scale more easily and have a bit more resilience and faster recovery times and stuff like that. And a couple of weeks ago now, we finally moved our main virtual learning environment, which most of our students use most of the time, to the cloud. And it's working. So I'm quite happy.
Which particular cloud did you use?
We ended up using AWS.
I was interested to note in some courtroom discovery today that Pinterest announced that they spend, or are committed to spend, in AWS somewhere in the region of $3.5 billion between now and 2029.
Holy
are you
moly.
On a similar level to Pinterest? I
suspect we're quite a lot lower than Pinterest. I mean, it doesn't come cheap, but it is impressive technology, I have to say, especially if you compare, like, looking at the performance and looking at the if you look at the recovery times and things like that compared to what we were running on premise, it's really quite impressive.
You're locked in now, though. There's no getting out of, once you're in AWS, you're not getting out.
I barely understand what Pinterest is, and I'm now baffled as to why it requires $3.6 billion of investment in AWS to keep it running. That seems remarkably expensive.
Well, Martin, you know how pictures use a lot of disk space and a lot of bandwidth?
Well, you say a lot.
That's why.
Imagine a billion pictures.
This is a lot of people who go to Pinterest.com.
Okay, well, apparently, yeah.
Yeah, I know. And on that bombshell, let's move on. So this week, we had a little voyage of discovery. We discovered a niche operating system, which is slightly more niche than our current Linux environment. And it's called Serenity OS. And we loved it so much that we wanted to invite Andreas Kling, who I don't know if goes under the name of Awesome Kling or Super Kling, something like that online, to chat to us about Serenity. Andreas, thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Super. So I think Martin and I discovered Serenity at the same time, but obviously you've been working on this for a while. That's very clear from how advanced it is. If someone were to ask you, you know, what is Serenity and what does it do? What would be your elevator pitch right now?
Right. So it is an operating system that tries to combine all of the things that I love about the systems I've used throughout my life. So it takes the GUI from the 90s, Microsoft Windows 2000, thereabouts, and combines that with a more modern Unix-like experience. But it's kind of not completely contemporary Unix experience, but something from like 2006, 2007 or so, when stuff was still in text files and you could kind of edit your way through configuring the system. That's sort of what it is about. And it's just a complete labor of love for me. I don't have any user acquisition goals or anything like that. And I'm not trying to convince anybody to use it. I just started building something for myself in my little corner. And it turns out that a whole bunch of people found it interesting and wanted to join in. So it kind of got a bit out of hand when I open sourced it and people joined in.
So knowing a little bit about what Serenity OS is, I'm going to ask you an obvious question. Is Serenity OS a Linux-based operating system?
It is not. It is completely novel. So I started building the system from scratch in 2018. And the origin story is that I had spent 3 months in a drug rehab. And when I came out of there, I found that now that I didn't have drugs anymore, it was really difficult to figure out what to do with all my time. I had the whole day and there was just so many hours in a whole day. So I needed something to do.
So write a kernel.
Right.
Well,
so
we may laugh, but you are smiling with us on this one.
It's, yes,
you know, we're not laughing at you. We're laughing with you. And I think like Mark touched on a point there, like why on earth would you do this? Like there are plenty of things you could do with your time. What focused your attention on doing this?
Well, I think like many programmers, I had childhood aspirations at some point of building my own operating system. When I was in that kind of vulnerable place, then I was looking over my whole life and sort of sifting through childhood memories and things and thinking, you know, who was I before all of this mess started? And it was very interesting because I came across these old childhood dreams and I realized that, well, what if I just pick one of these up and go to town, try to pursue it? And that's sort of where it came from. And actually, it's funny because I've searched on Usenet and I managed to find these old posts when I was a kid, like 9, 10 years old, asking on like Alt OS assembly, like, oh, I'm trying to build an operating system and I can't get the boot sector to work. So it's pretty cool.
I mean, my Usenet posts from that kind of era are quite embarrassing. So,
Are embarrassing too, actually.
Just to be clear, you started by writing your own kernel because that's the beginnings of an operating system.
Actually, I started not with the kernel, but with a handful of other things. So in the beginning, I was really just tinkering. So I built a set of random things. So I built a GUI framework and a little ELF executable parser and also a EXT2 file system browser. And when I had those three, It was almost like this Steve Jobs moment introducing the iPhone. Like you have an ELF floater, an EXT2 browser, and a GUI toolkit, right? So at that point, I just needed a kernel.
I can imagine you on stage right now in you know,
right.
A polo shirt and tight jeans and a great presentation. Maybe in 10 years that will happen. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
What took you from that leap from I've made an EXT2 file browser, I've made an ELF loader, and I could draw windows on the screen? What took you to I should make an entire operating system?
It just seemed like the logical conclusion because I didn't want to let any of these projects go. But at the same time, there was nowhere really to take them independently. So I just thought, well, what if I mash them together? And that's what happened.
So this being an entirely novel operating system, it's not, I guess it doesn't run apps written for other operating systems, does it? So does that mean that you've also written all of the apps that it runs?
That is basically right.
And what apps are there?
There's a whole lot of them. So I guess the biggest, most complex one is a web browser, a from scratch browser engine and JavaScript engine.
Fly me.
And it also has an image editor, a text editor, all of that stuff. It also has a spreadsheet, but that one is mostly for fun. It's not.
Of course. Of course it is. I mean, there's Solitaire in there as well, but that's not for fun. The spreadsheet is for fun.
So I have to ask you, because anyone that's capable of writing a kernel may start a kernel project, which is a significant endeavor. Or maybe they start a graphical toolkit, which is a significant endeavor. Or maybe they want to create a new browser, another significant endeavor. Not satisfied with any one of those, you took on all of them and then wrapped it all up in a whole operating system. But as I understand it, everything is whole cloth, fresh implementation. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. So we do not accept third-party code. We used to have a tiny bit of it, but we got rid of it over time. So we just needed some decompression library that we took just for bootstrapping. Mm-hmm. But we've since gotten rid of that. So it is all novel from scratch, C++. But I should mention that the system is or strives to be POSIX compliant, so it can run standard Unix programs. So we have over 100 ports already, like GCC, stuff like that, and SDL. Okay.
So someone could clone a Git repo on a Serenity system of something written in C++ that compiles natively on Linux with GCC and could compile it potentially on Serenity.
Potentially, yeah. We have a Git port as well, so you should be able to wrangle it down from the web, maybe.
What's the motivation for being completely novel? Like there's this feeling among most developers that you don't want to reinvent the wheel and that you want to reuse libraries that exist. Like why would you recreate a library for compression or something when somebody else has already done that? What's your motivation for recreating these things?
Right. So that really comes from, I used to work at Apple for many years. So I worked on the Safari browser for almost 7 years. And something that happens at Apple, but I haven't really seen anywhere else, is that they have all the code under one roof, give or take. But basically, all the code and all the experts on that code are all under the same roof. And if you want to get anything done software-wise, you can just yell loud enough and you got the expert coming your way. And that kind of environment doesn't really exist in the open source world.
You could yell on IRC, maybe.
Right.
It's not quite the same, I know.
You could. But I guess this was sort of, my idea was that I would try to recreate that type of environment in the open source space. And I don't believe that I could infect the existing culture with this way of thinking. So I figured, well, I have these little things here in my little project. Why don't I just take it to the extreme and see what happens? And so far, it's been working out surprisingly well. We have, you know, almost 500 contributors now, and we still don't have third-party code in the system.
So when did the Serenity OS project start? And at what point did your first contributors start getting involved?
My original doodle programs, they were in October of 2018. So that was just me doodling around at my relative's house. And it took until, I think, March or April in 2019 before the first external contributions came in. So I was on my own for the first half year plus. I made an IRC channel pretty early on.
Of course.
And it was just me sitting in there, right? And I remember in March of 2019, somebody came and joined, but they didn't say anything. But now there were two of us. And I thought, this could really go somewhere.
The project doubled in size overnight.
Exactly.
Brilliant. So I think anyone who's listening to this who hasn't looked you up online and hasn't seen any video or articles about Serenity, I think you've got to think in your mind's eye, like you said, the Windows 2000 aesthetic. If there's the start button in the bottom left-hand corner, there's the little tray of commonly used things next to the start button. There's the window buttons for open applications. There's the commonly called sys tray in the bottom right-hand corner. And Windows have that boxy style, compact style that you get on Windows 98 and Windows 2000. And do you see yourself making something that's more modern, or are you going to stick to this because of, as you said, your earlier memories and how this you know pleases you, this aesthetic?
The general aesthetic is indeed very pleasing to me, and I see myself sticking to it. But I think there's definitely room for modernization of the technology that underpins it. So stuff like high DPI screens, for example, means that we could do a high resolution version of this type of interface. And things like font smoothing and, shadows and things like that. Like there's room to experiment. And something that's more subtle, but that we do in the interface is that we actually incorporate more modern UI elements. So for example, we have a breadcrumb bar, which was not a thing in back in those original days. And we're experimenting with something like a macOS Spotlight interface where you can search for anything that you want in the system. So yes and no. Like, I think the general aesthetic is my preference to stay, at least as a default. But I would also like to modernize that aesthetic.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say the default look and feel jangles all sorts of, you know, nostalgia strings with me.
It's beautiful. I love it. It is
beautiful. It is a beautiful little bit of capture of how things were, and it works very elegantly. And as you say, it's refined from that era with some quality of life improvements. But what I really liked about it is there are some themes, because of course. And there were two that caught my attention. One, which is very reminiscent of Next Step, which I was fortunate enough to work on. And also one that looks a bit like Solaris CDE, sort of the motif look and feel. And one that looks like macOS 8 as well. So there's a subtle sort of little encapsulation of lots of those traditional desktop environments from that era. It's rather terrific. So as you've been working on this, and you know, you talked about a web browser and no third-party code, so that means no Blink engine, no V8 JavaScript engine. You've had to implement your own browser rendering engine and your own JavaScript engine.
Yeah, that's right. And I know that it's a popular meme these days to complain that the web has become too complex and you can't possibly implement a new browser and so on. But I mean, I've been in that industry for so long that I know what goes into a browser. So to me, this is not a scary prospect. I know where all the specs are and I know how to read them. So for me, this is just like, okay, this is this amount of work. And then you have to hunker down and do the work.
Right.
And I got time, so it's okay.
Are there any parts of the system that you feel like you've got on your wish list that you would really love to knock off, or for someone to come along and just you know, contribute a significant chunk of time, because like you say, time is a factor here, and you're clearly grateful that you have this amount of time to be able to work on this thing. But if you could get more time via more warm bodies to come and, you know, contribute, are there any big ticket items you'd love for other people to work on?
Not really. I would much rather have people come and work on the thing that interests them. So, I try to never, ever tell anybody what to do in this project other than you broke this, please fix it. but outside of that, I just leave everybody to their own devices, because I tend to think that the best software, at least the best open source software, is built if everybody's just pursuing the thing that interests them the most at this moment, right? So that means that we do get a bit lopsided sometimes, and I sort of have to take it on upon myself to even out the quality of the system, because, you know, people come in and everybody's excited about JavaScript, so they work on that, and then the next month people are interested in the image editor, so a bunch of time gets spent on that. But ultimately, that's how I like it, because then the software was made, you know, in the spirit that I'm looking for.
Speaking of the spirit, I've noticed, and I hope this isn't an unfair comparison, I've seen some comparisons between Serenity OS and Temple OS. Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about that kind of, you know, comparison, some esoteric out there, slightly different motivation for creating this thing? How do you feel about those kind of comparisons?
Well, I think it's very unfortunate what happened to Terry Davis, the creator of Temple OS. And I certainly don't mind the comparisons, but I think, you know, if you look below the surface of these two systems, then they're very different systems and have very different people and motivations behind them. And my understanding of Temple OS is that there was never any attempt to make it a collaborative effort, for example, whereas No. Serenity is certainly that.
You mentioned earlier about having time to work on it, being thankful for the time you have to work on it. Quite recently, this became your sort of full-time endeavor.
Yeah, that's true. So I started it in 2018, but back then I was actually unemployed when I started it, but I got a job halfway into the next year. And then about 3 months ago, I had basically collected enough Patreons and GitHub sponsors and things of that nature to have something like a sustainable income from this, or at least something trending towards a sustainable income. So I asked my wife, and she said, just do it. So I did.
Fantastic.
Just quit my job and decided to do this full time to see what happens. And thankfully, that trend has continued towards sustainability. So while it was very, very shaky and risky when I did quit, it has since gotten on pretty good ground.
Excellent. That's good to hear.
So for people who want to try out Serenity, you know, I've seen the instructions. They're very straightforward, very easy to follow. You know, an idiot like me who can clone a repository and run a couple of scripts. And after running the scripts, a VM window pops up and Serenity boots up and I can play solitaire or noodle around the system, and it's fantastic and I love it. I've seen there's a number of people who've requested the capability to install on bare metal hardware. And are you avoiding that or pushing back against that? Or is that just not a goal of the system to become a daily driver desktop operating system, and you'd rather keep it in that confined VM because it's easier? Or is there some other reason for that?
So there are a bunch of people who have gotten the system running on their hardware already. So, and I've done that myself. I have one computer running it. But for me personally, it's not really a priority at this point, because I'm more interested in building something fairly complete so that when the day comes and Serenity is more convenient to me than using Linux, which I currently use, then I can just switch and not have to think about, oh, I wish I would be on Linux because this or that, right?
Right. That sounds quite self-serving. And is that fair?
I think so. I mean, the whole project was just supposed to be self-serving for me.
Right. Well, it's your project. You do right. as you wish, you know.
but as I like to tell people that I have my goals, but everybody who works on the system has their goals. And somehow we just have to meet in the middle and coordinate our common goals. And I think a lot of people who have joined the project are much more interested in bare metal than I am. So they have a chat channel where they congregate and talk about their driver development and things like that. And I mostly stay out of it.
Wow.
Because, you know, there's a lot of different things to work on in the system. So
turns out it's quite big, this project.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's been absolutely fabulous to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us, Andreas. Is there somewhere you would point people if they're interested in this, if they're this tickles their nostalgia and people have a spare bit of time and you think they might want to contribute? Where should we point people?
Well, I think probably the best way to get introduced to the system is to check out my YouTube channel, because I have a channel where I post regular development videos, but I also do this monthly update where at the last day of every month, I sort of make a summary of all the changes from the last month and go through them and give a little demo and so on. So that's usually the best place to get up to speed and get an idea of if this would be something that interests you.
Brilliant. We'll point people in that direction and put a link in the show notes. It's been lovely talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And good luck with Serenity OS. And now it's time for Command Line Love. Whose was this? I think this is one of yours, Marks.
I think so. This, I believe, came up in the Ubuntu Podcast Telegram channel, which you can find at ubuntupodcast.org/telegram. This is a way of outputting clickable hyperlinks in your terminal. I think it uses some ANSI escape sequences, which are supported in GNOME Terminal and increasingly in other terminal emulators as well. There was actually the GitHub gist that is going to be linked in the show notes was at one point tracking all of the terminal emulators that had implemented it or had open requests for this as a feature. But basically, if you output in the same way that you can output colored text in a terminal, you can enter the right sequence of characters and you can output some text which is a clickable hyperlink, and you click it in your terminal and it opens in a browser.
I don't see the Serenity terminal mentioned in the list. We'll have to get in touch with Andreas and make sure this sorry. This is pretty interesting. It's quite cool.
Yeah, so if you have a program which you want to be able to output links, this is how you do it, basically. Nice. In supported terminals. I hope that unsupported terminals ignore it rather than outputting /E:8:: every time. But your mileage may vary, I expect.
Yes. Well, you can always file bugs upstream in the terminal that doesn't work and let them know that this is something that should be supported. Brilliant. Thanks for that. And now it's time for your wonderful feedback. First up, Torin Doyle left a comment on our website.
I put that bash history command line lerv in my .bashrc file, then I get an error in my terminal. How should the command be used?
Mark. Blame Mark.
Well, you don't need to blame me, because we had another email, didn't we, Alan?
Lucky Lee emailed show@ubuntupodcast.org.
The bash history tweak has a typo, I think. I suspect it's intended to look like this. And we have updated the show notes with this.
Yes, it turns out Lucky Lee was right, and I ninja'd the show notes just before we started recording last week.
Oopsie. Kenneth Law left a comment on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/ubuntupodcast.
Alan wanted all the negative feedback here on YouTube, so here's mine. The podcast is too short, you lazy nerds, and Mark shouldn't play gory games like Doom. The new SpongeBob game is much better suited for a dad.
Okay. Thanks for your wonderful feedback, Kenneth. Big Pod also left a comment on our YouTube channel.
I'm using Edge.
Brilliant. Does that class as negative feedback on our YouTube channel? Nicholas Ng left a comment on our YouTube channel.
I'm stopping at the part where you mentioned Microsoft Edge. Sorry, unsub now. Who are we? What do we stand for? We are the ones who... I stopped reading, Nicholas. Sorry, I've unsubbed from your comment.
Oh, meow. I can understand why hardcore Linux nerds or hardcore free software nerds balk when one of us say we use Microsoft Edge. But what I find equally frustrating is it's okay to use Steam and play loads of proprietary games or install the NVIDIA browser, but thou shalt not use a Microsoft product. It seems just bonkers to me. So, yes, thank you for your comment, Nicholas Ng. And that's the end of all your feedback. Thank you all for listening, everyone. That's the end of the show. It's season, 14, episode 26, nearly Christmas. thanks for listening. Do remember to send us your feedback, and we'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.